What is going on, everyone? Welcome to the Decade Investor Podcast. I'm here today with my friend, Andy, also known as Your Friend Andy, who runs the YouTube channel, Your Friend Andy, with over 100,000 subscribers. Andy, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Colin, my friend. It's good to see you. Good chat with you on the podcast. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So with your YouTube channel specifically and all of your content, you talk about money, but more specifically, you talk about crypto. And that's why I wanted to bring you on the show here to explain to my listeners a little bit about yourself, but also about cryptocurrency. You know, Bitcoin ETFs have hit the market recently, and that's the talk of the town. And cryptocurrency, this new digital currency, all things crypto is what I want to talk about today. So with that being said, can we learn a little bit about you? Who are you? How did you get into crypto? And why do you choose crypto as a way to grow your wealth?
Yeah. So I, like you said, on YouTube, I create content about crypto. Over the past 6 to 7 years, I have dedicated a very large portion of my life to crypto, and specifically a lot of it to Bitcoin. I've also dedicated a very large portion of my wealth and my net worth to the world of crypto, to the dismay of many people around me and many people over the years who have thought that was not such a great idea. But so far, everything has worked out very swimmingly. But I first got introduced to crypto years and years ago, and I dismissed it over and over again until I finally sat down and started plugging away and really, truly trying to understand it. And once I did that in earnest, I realized that there was something there. I kind of had the idea in my head that what I was looking at was the beginning of kind of a new era in economics and finance, almost like, you know, once upon a time, it was a new era of communication when the internet was first starting to get mainstream adoption and movement. So I kind of saw it as a kind of a seismic shift like that, and I wanted to be a part of it. So I've just kind of dug in and gone deep down the rabbit hole. Drink the Kool-Aid every day and learn as much as possible about it. I do all that because I believe that I'm preparing for this kind of new wave of economics and finance. I think that those of us who are brave enough to kind of dip our toes in this now will most likely be highly rewarded into the future. But also recognizing that it's all kind of a big experiment and we're seeing it play out in real time. And that in and of itself is fascinating to watch.
I don't remember the exact numbers, but I do recall at one point you were in debt. Like you didn't know anything about money. You know anything about finances, racking up credit cards. And you have now since gotten out of debt and are a millionaire. And can you kind of explain just how you started in debt, kind of that route, and then what has been the process to become a millionaire?
Yeah. So unlike some people who maybe run this podcast, I did not get started with investing or making good financial decisions early. I wish I had, because I would be so much farther ahead now if I had. But I spent most of my 20s being fairly dumb about money, racking up credit card debt almost to the tune of six figures. It was like $86,000 in debt, living paycheck to paycheck, having no investments, and just being stupid when it came to my money making decisions, but also just ignorant when it came to like what understanding investing in money in general. So I spent my entire 20s like that. Towards the end of my 20s, I just got really tired of dealing with, not knowing if I'm able to pay my next utility bill or my rent or whatever, getting really tired of just being anxious all the time about money things and knowing if I have enough in my account. So I just let all that tiredness of the situation boil up and decided to make a change, started educating myself on personal finance, just the basics and kind of baby stepping my way into it, tried as aggressively as I possibly could to earn more money on the side through side hustles and various things, put all that extra money I was earning on the side towards attacking my debt, towards building up investments. And then that has spiraled into making some you know, in retrospect, some really good financial decisions over the past decade that have, you know, kind of catapulted me to millionaire status faster than, you know, some people do it. You know, a 10-year time frame to where I'm at today, where I'm just trying to rinse and repeat some of those fundamentals I learned once upon a time, but also trying to recognize what are the coming trends or the big seismic shifts, or you know, where are the best places to kind of deploy my money so it goes to work for me.
So I think it's very important while we talk about crypto, but specifically Bitcoin, to just get a baseline understanding of what Bitcoin is. So in your words, what is Bitcoin?
Yeah, so Bitcoin is a digital currency. It's not the first digital currency ever. It's the first decentralized digital currency ever, and it's the original and most successful by far. But essentially, it is software. It's money as software. And this software comes in the form of a blockchain. And the real easy way to think about a blockchain is it's like a giant online Excel spreadsheet, where each cell, as you keep going down further and further in the spreadsheet, each one of those cells is a block. And within each one of those, there's transactions of this coin back and forth, and sending to this person, receiving from this person, etc. And for every one of those little blocks, it's a window into time. And all the transactions that happen during that little window of time, which in Bitcoin, it's usually about every 10 minutes, all those transactions are locked forever in that Excel spreadsheet, on that cell. And then once that one is locked in, we move on to the next one. And that's why it's called a chain. We keep going from link to link to link. And so each one of those cells is a little snapshot into everything that happened on the entire network for this digital currency in that time frame. And we lock it into place, which is why you can go back and search and see all the transactions across. And this blockchain, this digital distributed ledger, and the reason it's called distributed is because it's spread out all over the world. So everybody who runs Bitcoin runs this Bitcoin software. And there's all these computers all around the world with this software running on it. This is one of the beauties of Bitcoin. So if me, Andy, wanted to send Colin, if I was feeling really generous, I wanted to send him one full Bitcoin.
Let's do it.
Sign me up. And I sent that to him. That would be recorded across this spreadsheet, this ledger, all around the world. We'd all see that happen. But let's say Colin was feeling, you know, he was feeling like he's feeling nefarious today. He was feeling a little like he wanted to scam somebody. He's going to pull a fast one. And he opens up the Bitcoin software and he says, actually, Andy sent me 10 Bitcoin, and he changes his numbers, because after all, it's just software. It's just a, you know, a big ledger effectively. So he changes that. He adds a zero and he changes it from 1 to 10 Bitcoin. Well, because that the software is all around the world and this ledger is spread all around the globe, they're all running a checks and balance against each other. It's decentralized and there's consensus in terms of what the overall picture is. And so if one person, you know, 1% of the entire network says, actually, this person doesn't have one Bitcoin, they have 10 Bitcoin, the entire network checks against itself. And if that is an outlier, they all say, nope, that's not true. And they dismiss that transaction completely. So this fixes a problem with the original digital currencies, which is the double spend problem. It's like if you hop on Napster back in the day, you download an MP3 of your favorite band. What's to stop you from copying that MP3 and sending it to 5 of your friends? There's no difference between the one you have, the MP3, and the one that they have. It's all the same digital file. So, you know, if you have a digital currency, what's to stop you from making copies of your digital dollars and then sending it to all your friends, and all of a sudden, oops, I'm a millionaire overnight because I just copied and pasted it a bunch of times. And Bitcoin solves that problem by introducing this network effect where they all check each other and make sure everyone is being honest. And to do the math and to do the computation and to make the chain move forward and to make new Bitcoins over time, there's something called Bitcoin mining, which is a whole complicated thing, but effectively just know that there's really powerful computers spread all around the world. I have some myself that are doing computations all the time to kind of move that network forward and to keep it really, really secure. But effectively, this is the first time we've ever had a digital currency that could solve this double spend problem, that can move money across space and time effectively, and it's all secured on your end. Your Bitcoin wallet, if you have one of if you have a Bitcoin wallet yourself, is secured by what's called a seed phrase, or think of like a password. It's a series of words that you have that unlock your wallet. And this is getting a little bit in the weeds of more advanced stuff with Bitcoin. But one of the beauties here, and one of the reasons why I want to mention this, is because for the first time ever, if you are in a country where you don't like the government or something and you want to leave that country and they confiscate all your belongings and your wealth at the border, or if you want to hop on an airplane and take all your money with you and you don't want to transfer it via banks or write a check or carry it in gold or carry it in cash. For the first time ever in our history, we have a way you can put your money into this digital currency. You can remember a series of words, your password for your wallet for this money. You can take no physical things whatsoever. You can go somewhere else in the world, buy a computer, get the Bitcoin software on that computer, plug in your words, and all of a sudden, all your wealth is back right there in front of you under your control. And that's a very new idea in the world of money. It's a very exciting one to have uncontrollable money. And there's lots of people who say it's a bad thing. There's lots of people who say it's a good thing. But overall, Bitcoin, I think, in my estimation, is solving a lot of the problems that once upon a time gold solved. And now we have a digital version of gold that I think is going to be a big and major component of our economy at large and a macro scale into the future.
And with that, you kind of mentioned at the end there, wallets and seed phrases. And, if someone's out there and they're like, I don't even know what that means, I don't even know how I would set that up, welcome to 2024, because now we've had the convergence of cryptocurrency, or specifically Bitcoin, and the stock market, where there's now Bitcoin ETFs, which have taken the stock market, the traditional finance world by storm. Inflows are wild. Anywho, can you kind of give an overview of with these seed phrases, these wallets, like, do people that buy these ETFs have to know those things? What is kind of the difference between just going to Robinhood or Fidelity or whatever and buying a Bitcoin ETF versus actually going on to, a Bitcoin software, or to sending, Bitcoin to your own wallet? Kind of what are the differences there?
So buying a Bitcoin ETF, any one of the 11 that were just approved in January, is a great way to get indirect exposure to Bitcoin and Bitcoin's price. There is direct exposure underlying, because the Fidelities of the world, the BlackRocks of the world, the way this is written for these ETFs, they have to actually own the Bitcoin that they are selling the ETFs in terms of quantity for. So they hold that Bitcoin for you effectively, but there is no mechanism for you to take your ETF and exchange it for Bitcoin directly, or have a seed phrase or whatever. It's just like buying any other stock or ETF. If you hop on whatever brokerage you like and your name is Colin and you love VOO more than anything else, it's just the same as buying VOO. It's just a stock ticker. It's just giving you price exposure to a certain asset or asset class or basket of assets, which means I think it's a very big net positive for the industry, because now there's a bunch of people who don't want to deal with what's a Bitcoin wallet, how do I use a crypto exchange, how do I get my US dollars or whatever currency into here and get Bitcoin exchange, and how do I keep it secure, what's the seed phrase, how do I operate this? Those are a lot of things that I'm cool with, and I like the ability to have custody of my money and have true, full control over it. But that's very overwhelming for a lot of people. So the ETF introduces a way where you can just hop in Fidelity, Robinhood, whichever brokerages support it, buy one of these tickers, and now you have a little bit of price exposure to Bitcoin, and there's no other thinking required. You don't need to worry about security. That's all, these are registered brokerages that have insurance against losses and various things. The only thing you have to worry about is, do you believe in Bitcoin in the long term? Are you okay with the price movements up and down? Are you okay holding that underlying asset? And if so, it's as easy as that. But yeah, the other end of the things self-custody, that's a whole different can of worms. And I, you know, highly recommend that before you go down that route, you do a lot of research into the space, understand exactly what you are taking on. Because when it comes to like knowing your seed phrase for your wallet and the password to your wallet and stuff, you know, this is such an extreme self-custody currency that if you were to lose that seed phrase, you lose access to your Bitcoin forever. And there is no like contact support and help them forget your password, you know, kind of thing. That doesn't exist. It's truly on you to keep it secure. So if that scares you, which it should scare everybody at first, you get more comfortable with it as you understand it, then, you know, looking at something like the ETFs is an interesting idea for a lot of people, especially older people who are just really used to the traditional world.
So you think that for someone coming into Bitcoin and wanting to get exposure to it, you think the ETFs, at least get your feet wet, is a great place to start?
Yeah, I think it's a great place to start. I mean, I'm always going to advocate for buying Bitcoin directly, with the caveat that you really need to understand what you're doing and how you're doing it and making sure all that stuff, because I love the idea of having full control of my wealth. However, I think just as an entry way to get into it, especially because you can just hop on Robinhood and it's the easiest thing in the world to just like put a couple bucks in there and buy a Bitcoin ETF and get a feel for it. Yeah, that's a great, a super great way to do it. And I think this is a net positive for the entire industry of crypto in general.
I find it interesting that what I see a lot on social media and talking to people about crypto is there is kind of a separation, right? You have Bitcoin and then you have crypto. Some people would say that, right? Is Bitcoin is crypto, but crypto maybe is not Bitcoin. Do you agree with that sentiment? Do you think you kind of view Bitcoin and cryptocurrency? I mean, I know Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency, but you kind of separate the two, or do you see it all as one?
Yeah, so I am not what some people would refer to as a Bitcoin maximalist, where I believe that, you know, Bitcoin is the only legitimate thing out there in the entire realm of crypto. Everything else is an outright scam. Nothing else has a chance. You know, as much of a Bitcoin fan as I am, where the majority of my portfolio is Bitcoin, I do recognize that there is a possibility of other things within this space getting market adoption, having a market fit, having real utility or real use, or bringing something to the table that is interesting. At the same time, I also recognize that 95%+ of everything we call cryptocurrency is fairly meaningless in the long-term scheme of things, and is mostly just a speculative space where people are just betting on random stuff and hoping it all works out, because it's a lot of, you know, wishful thinking and a lot of big dreams and stuff. So yeah, I think there is a difference between Bitcoin and crypto. And I think one of the biggest is just that Bitcoin was the first successful cryptocurrency. It's the first decentralized, you know, digital currency in the world. It wasn't the first digital currency. It's just the first one that was decentralized and got the formula right. So it has this amazing, you know, first mover advantage, but also just this moat of network effect and adoption. But also it's one that really fits the bill for a lot of the things I kind of see a digital currency fit within the future. Now, there are lots of other use cases in the world of crypto. You don't have to just use it as currency. And so there might be lots of other places for other things out there. But, you know, when I see where the market's shifting, it seems like it's very Bitcoin focused and everything else is mostly interesting thought experiments with some exceptions here and there. But I would say also just on that topic, it's real easy to get sucked into the world of crypto. It's very exciting. It's fast moving. There's lots of potential to get rich overnight. And I think that's where I see the real danger and where I do make that big separation between the two. And I think I would exercise caution and I would exercise some hesitation to go into it slowly, because you do get wrapped up and you see some random new coin that people are talking about. They're like, it's the next Bitcoin. It's going to replace Bitcoin. It's going to make you rich overnight. And there's been thousands, literally thousands of those that have existed and since no longer existed. The next Bitcoins come and go like crazy. And that's not to say it will never be dethroned. I don't personally see it, but I won't, you know, I don't know the future, but the entire space is rife with that type of stuff. And for a newcomer, I find that to be fairly dangerous, even though it is exciting.
Yeah. And on that point, something that, so for those that don't know, let me step back. Andy and I'm going to use a word that's sad, but used to be business partners. I left by choice. But something that I enjoy about Andy and his content is while crypto is more volatile, more fast moving than traditional markets, you can still be successful at it. Andy is a walking proof of that. Point to say that is there's a lot of bad actors in this space, right? In this space being crypto, where they are promising, quite honestly, promising you're going to get rich quick or overnight with this new token that came about, right? Or this new cryptocurrency, whatever it is. But Andy, on the other hand, is long-term thinker like I am. He just long-term thinks in crypto. I long-term think in the traditional markets. But at the end of the day, we both think long-term. I'm not saying Andy's the only one that does this, but he is one of them that does think long-term. But knowing that there's a lot of bad actors in this space, and a beginner or someone new to crypto is listening to this episode or just in general is wanting to learn more, where can they go to get away from those bad actors? Or how can they smell out a bad actor in this space?
Yeah. So, I mean, education is one piece of that puzzle. And then the other is just building up your sense of, you know, what is good and bad out there. On the like education front, if you're a book reader and you want to learn about Bitcoin specifically, a few books that I've read and would recommend to jump into the space to get an understanding of it would be things like The Bitcoin Standard, The Price of Tomorrow, Inventing Bitcoin, Layered Money, This Book Will Save You Time, and The Sovereign Individual. That's a few. I mean, there's even more than that, but that's a few of my shorter lists that I think are all great. But just those first three especially are a great place to start when it comes to learning about Bitcoin if you want to go to the book route. Now, if you want to go the video watching route, in my early days, I watched a lot of Andreas Antopoulos, who has done some great videos on just explaining how Bitcoin works and how blockchain works and stuff. And is more comprehensive, does a lot of crypto education in general. But also there's a channel called Bitcoin University, which is Bitcoin only focused. And they're definitely on the side where everything else is more or less a scam, but it's really solid Bitcoin education if you're just interested in learning about that. And then if you're want to learn about crypto in general, like what is this coin and how does it work? And what about this token and how does it work? And how do I navigate this space? Then a channel like Coin Bureau is a great place to look. So that's like the education side of things. The other side of things, you know, it comes to like bad actors and stuff. A lot of it is you develop over time. Some of it starts with just common sense. If it sounds too good to be true, you should be very skeptical. And unless you have people who are provably winning with that thing, it's probably going to be a scam or whatever. And even if people are winning with it, it still might be a scam or something nefarious. An interesting aspect of crypto is you can make a lot of money in things that are Ponzi schemes or use Ponzi elements or whatever, but you just have to be early in on the scene and not be the person who's late. And so a lot of people do that, you know, in this space. But you have to be savvy enough to recognize what those things are, and you have to be willing and okay, you know, with getting into those things, because it is a lot of speculative bubble stuff going on. But I think really, you know, if you can work on the basics, start with educating yourself, what is Bitcoin? What is crypto? What, you know, how does transferring and sending it work? How do wallets work? How does the blockchain work? Learn those things, work on the basics. Then it kind of gives you a lens to look at the entire industry through and then help you navigate and decide, you know, does this seem legit? Does this not seem legit? Is this actually fitting a need out there in the market? And does it have a real use case? And then just as you walk through that, you build up some experience. And I think one of my greatest assets in the space with navigating what's good and bad and where there's opportunity, where there's not, and what to avoid is I've just have, you know, 6 to 7 years under my belt at this point. And that is extremely helpful. And I'm going to be better equipped to see a lot of those things. While not perfect, I'll still miss some. I'm still going to be better equipped than somebody who is on month one of this entire entire journey. So my encouragement, I think, to end this would be to not get caught up in the excitement and the fear of missing out, the FOMO, to always be okay with taking a step back and taking a slower approach to it, because it's always going to be a benefit to you. Even if you miss things that do turn out to be legit and could be money-making opportunities, if you just take a step back and go a little bit slower, you're going to be more careful and have less chances of losing all your money or whatever. And let me just promise you, for every one opportunity you miss by going slow, there's going to be 100 more in the future. That's one of the beauties of this space, is there's tons and tons of opportunity. So my encouragement is always to just take your time, stay within your comfort zone, and don't get overexcited and chase things just because of shiny object syndrome.
Yeah, and another great resource is the Your Friend Andy YouTube channel is another great resource as well. Yes. But, you know, an anecdote to that is, like I said a minute ago, Andy and I have been business partners. So there was a long time where I talked to Andy every day about something. And I learned a lot from Andy about crypto. There'd be many times you'd mentioned, I recall seeing this exact, not necessarily exact, but similar kind of scheme going on that happened 3 years ago in crypto, right? Or 4 years ago. And that's something that, you know, only time can teach you, right? As someone who was new to it, like myself, you've been in it for many, many years. I would have never known that if you didn't tell me, because it's just something you saw that because you were in it longer. And I think that's where, like you said, learning the basics and understanding the basics. And if you miss this one opportunity, don't worry, because there's probably another one coming. And the way crypto moves, it could be, you know, next week is as early as it could come.
Oh yeah, I mean that's true across the board. You know, the saying, "There's nothing new under the sun." It's like if you are in a space long enough, you'll see trends and various things, and then you'll see new people come in. They'll talk about this incredible new thing that's so exciting, and if you've been around the space long enough, you might look at that and go, "Oh, that's just like this big thing that turned out to be a scam that was, you know, two cycles ago or whatever." And so, yeah, I think experience is one of the most valuable resources in this space.
So do you have any traditional investments, like in the stock market, outside of crypto? Or are you, like, on a percentage basis, would you say 80% of your money is in crypto, 80% in traditional markets? Do you have, off the top of your head, like a percentage basis of your breakdown?
I believe 70% of my net worth is crypto right now. And yes, do have some traditional investments, though controversially and to the dismay of many people across platforms like Twitter and stuff, over the past year, almost all of 2023, I hardly put any money into traditional investments like index funds and S&P 500 type stuff. It all went towards towards crypto. And, you know, some people think that that's crazy and I'm stupid, and I guess we'll have to wait and find out.
So volatility is something that happens in every market, but it's definitely emphasized more in the crypto market. You know, Bitcoin is not unlikely. I mean, at one point it was down like 50%, right, from its highs or higher. Now for the S&P 500, let's say, for example, for it to be down 50%, you know, this day and age, who knows what would happen? I mean, it would be like the end of the world probably. Does being in crypto and maybe watching your portfolio on a percentage basis be, you know, in a matter of a few months or a year, you know, could be down 50, 60, potentially even more, 70%. Does that kind of build up your strength of, now I watch my traditional market portfolio be down 4%, and it's like, you know, that is all hell breaks loose at 4% down while your crypto is down 70. Does that kind of teach you, you know, from the crypto side to the traditional side, kind of teach you like, hey, 4% is not great. Obviously, we never want to be down, but I can handle this 4% because I just watched my crypto portfolio be down 70.
Oh, yeah. It's like a superpower in the traditional world. I mean, if you're somebody who's only have experience with stock investing and stuff, and a 10% down move or something causes you to panic and think about, I should sell all my stuff or whatever, my encouragement would be to stay away from crypto until you've kind of conquered that demon. Because This past cycle, Bitcoin went down 80%. The cycle before, it was down like 86%. And, you know, if you happen to time it wrong and you buy in for the first time ever at Bitcoin at near all-time highs, you then have to watch all the money you put into it erode by 70 to 80% over the course of a year or so. And that's not terribly easy for a lot of people. I think what makes it easier, again, to harp on this, is experience. Time in the market really helps smooth that out. The longer you're in the market, the greater understanding you have of the cycles and how it all works. But also, I feel like a lot of people who freak out about this stuff just don't understand what they're buying. So that's where education is huge. Like, really, truly understand what Bitcoin is, what people think it's going to be used for, where its place people think it's going to be in the market. Understanding the cycles and how they work will give you a lot of calm overall. But also, I think a big reason people freak out with stocks or with crypto or whatever is because they're just overexposed. So, you know, if you are taking the money you should have spent on your rent or your groceries and you're investing it, especially in higher risk assets like individual stocks or, heaven forbid, penny stocks, or in the world of crypto, or in, you know, altcoins, some new speculative just released altcoin, and that money is money you need, this is a bad decision. This is terrible. Like, you're going to have turmoil. You're going to be awake at night. So if you can't go to sleep at night and just be completely 100% calm and have no anxiety about where you put your money the day before, you're probably overexposed in a bad way, and you need to take that as a hard lesson and reassess how you're going to do that going forward.
So you've been very successful, Andy, in terms of starting at nearly negative 100 grand in debt to, you know, millionaire, and running a successful YouTube channel, and being my friend. You know, there's a lot of great accomplishments you've had in life so far.
That last one especially.
Yeah, exactly. But out of all those things, and this is not to be, you know, braggadocious, and if it is, then I give you the right to brag here. But what would you say is, like, in terms of financial speaking, what are you most proud of in your journey with money? What is, like, the one thing you lay your head on at night if you had to, you know, say, I am most proud of this?
One of my axioms, one of my mantras, if you want to call it that, one of my truths that I live, and it sounds harsh, but I, you know, something that, and maybe it's too much of a negative for some people, and they don't want to, you know, let this roll around their head constantly. But I appreciate it. I'm a realist. I'm a pragmatist. This is something I think on often. And that's the statement that no one is coming to save you. It's all on you. And that has been one of the cornerstones of my financial life, was the realization, as, you know, I could barely pay the bills and had all this debt and various things, the reality that no one was going to bail me out. There was no one. I've received no inheritance. There's no one who's, like, going to write me a check. The government wasn't trying to, you know, erase all my debt or various things like that. So I had to come to terms with, one, and again, there's definitely exceptions to this. This is an overgeneralization. I'm speaking from the place of a white American man in the United States of America. But one, this entire financial situation I found myself in was my fault and my doing, and it was up to me to fix it. And two, I needed to internalize that deeply before I could actually make a step towards fixing it. And so I did. I internalized that, and I said, the only person who's going to get me out of this situation is myself. How can I fix this? How can I change this? And then I just got to work. And it's just a series of just, there's no sexiness to it. It's like you just put in the work. And people say, you know, hard work doesn't get you anywhere anymore. And maybe that's true if you're talking about, like, really killing yourself at your 9-to-5 job or something and hoping somebody recognizes it. But hard work absolutely does make a difference when you apply it in the right places. And so I internalized that truth. I lived that truth. And I took it upon myself that the responsibility was mine. And I worked my ass off to get to where I am today. And I think the second, like, thing I'll say about that, another truth that I try to think often, that's a big reason for the channel, a big reason for, you know, me sharing online, is I don't think I'm special. with any of this stuff. I think my situation is a normal one for a lot of people. And I think what I did is also totally doable for a lot of people. I think if I did this, if, you know, maybe my timeline's a little faster than yours, or maybe yours will be faster, but if I can go from in debt to millionaire successfully over whatever time span it looks like for you, you can too. But you have to like get to a place where you're ready for a change and you realize that the change is up to you and you know that you have kind of a long, hard road in front of you.
First off, I think that's a great response completely agree with everything you said there. Now, switching gears slightly, let's say it is your last YouTube video ever. I don't know who the CEO of YouTube is, but let's say he or she is, Andy, you have been banned from YouTube, but you get one video left. And it's like a 20-second video, and it's your parting words to anyone that wants to listen. Again, as it pertains to money, like what would be your parting message? If it was the last thing you could say about money, finance, crypto, whatever it is, what would be that last saying, last sentence, last post that you would make?
I think I would say something along the lines of, one of the most terrifying things in my mind is getting to the end of my life and looking back at my entire life and having regrets, having things that I think in my head, I wish I had done that, or wouldn't have been cool if I'd done that, or it was always my dream to do that and I never did. And we get so comfortable in our daily lives that we don't ever explore those thoughts and think about what steps we can take to build a life for ourselves, design a life for ourselves to where we can have the freedom to pursue those things. And there's probably no greater privilege than being able to do that for yourself. And so if you're listening to this and you are someone who has, you feel like your life is mediocre or average, or you've gotten comfortable and there's all these things that you wish you could do, or freedoms and options you could have, and you don't try to pursue those things, then I think you're putting yourself in a situation where you're doing yourself a great disservice. That is your internal voice telling you, screaming out to make a change. And so I'd encourage you to start doing that today.
I'm going to go run through a brick wall after that message. No, all seriousness. So like, I agree wholeheartedly there as well. You protrude that every day. I don't even know if that's the right word. You know, you glow with that of like, hey, I've created this business, YouTube channel, my community, Sleep Money Club, which I'll have all these things to find Andy linked down below. You have all these things that you've done, but those really show that you took a chance on yourself in terms of you believe in the skill set, you believe in what you're doing, and you wake up every day. Even if you go to bed at 3 a.m. sometimes, you wake up every day ready to attack and, you know, chase the dream that you want, the life that you want to have. Like whether that's the other week you were skiing in Utah, and then, you know, you're going on vacation. Not that life's all about vacations and skiing and all these things, but you work hard when you're working hard so that you can do those things that you want to do whenever you want to do them.
Yeah. And let me just say this to any listeners still listening at this point, but you know, if you're listening to Colin's podcast, you are in the right place. I so very much wish that I could have been like Colin when I was young. If you are someone who is younger and you listen to what, you know, Colin's story and the kind of truths about money and finance and whatever that he shares, then you're already so far ahead of where I was and where so many people are. Colin is doing it super, super right. And I'm very proud of what he's done, but I'm also just a little bit like, man, I wish I could have been more like Colin when I was young. So I just want to encourage you, if you're here listening to him, you're in the right place. This is where you want to be. This is the guy to listen to. I appreciate you having me on.
Of course, of course. Andy, thank you for sharing your message, sharing your education on what you know about Bitcoin. I know a lot of people are curious about it. And of course, as it's been in the news about the ETFs and all of these things, you have some bad actors in this space, but I count you as a great actor in this space with your YouTube channel as well. So thank you for coming on the show. And like I said, everyone, all of Andy's links and everything, wherever you want to find Andy other than his house, everything is linked down in the show notes below. Andy, thanks again for coming on the show.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Well, there you have it. That is the episode. Thank you all for listening. My name is Colin, also known as the Decade Investor, and I'll see you in the next episode. Goodbye.